KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
Peace.
This job of keeping our children safe and teaching them well is something we can only do together.
If a staff person has one of those kinds of situations in his or her family, they would very likely let the school staff know, if so-and-so comes in here, I don't want to see that person.
Get yourself calm first, and then start talking to your children, because if you feel panicked, kids are going to see that.
It's child psychologist Bob Hilt of Seattle Children's Hospital on Talking to Kids. Are you saying anything to your kids this morning as you dropped them off to school, or are you keeping silent? What do you say to your children if you have said anything about the shootings in Connecticut to keep them feeling safe? And how are you feeling this morning about that, dropping them off? We also heard from Mike Donlin, who's the program supervisor for the Washington School Safety Center, and President Obama talking about the shooting in Connecticut and the tragedy that is following. Mike Donlin joins us to talk about these issues. Mike Donlin, thanks for talking to us.
You're welcome. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Mike Donlin is program supervisor for Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, the Safety Center. Well, what are you doing on a normal day, Mike Donlin? What's your job?
On a normal day, basically all those things that relate to school safety, the questions and the resources that come into our office around bullying and gangs in schools, emergency preparedness, discipline, LGBTQ, earthquakes,
I see.
All those things.
Yeah, you have a big portfolio.
Well, a lot of resources.
Yeah. All right, so after a tragedy like this, you have to look again at what you're doing. Anything right. jump out at you from what you saw occur in Connecticut that is different in Washington State or similar?
You know, as far as in terms of anything different, no, I don't see anything different. And in terms of similar, lots that's similar. The things that I see and the things that in watching the coverage and what I've learned, that school was about as prepared as a school could get in terms of their staff preparedness, their safety plan, the measures they had in place, and still the tragedy took place. And that could be any school in Washington. I know our schools here have safety plans in place. They practice their drills. They have training. They have resources and so on and so forth. Everybody is, you know, everybody is as prepared as they can be. And we trust and hope and pray that nothing like that happens here.
You know, I read that one of the things that happened was that somebody turned the intercom on so that the classrooms could hear the shooting, and therefore the teachers could act in how they were trained. What is the training for teachers? Protect the children by getting them into a secure locations, getting them into locked closets?
Well, it depends on the situation, and there are active shooter trainings. There are, you know, this particular one with a shooter would have been different from, say, a situation which might have been a chemical spill or something, you know, a fire, whatever. And so each of the preparations is, although similar, is slightly different in what you do. And what you would do in a situation like this is what the teachers did is to get your kids, lock the doors, get your kids as far away from the doors as possible, make sure the lights are off so nobody can see in if as much as possible, and keep those little bubbies safe.
What would what do you think, and maybe this is a broader question, and maybe again even to the question of gun control, but what needs to be improved in our systems? Where do you still see some things that need to be improved? Is it in training? Is it in locks? Is it in metal detectors? What else needs to happen to keep schools safe?
That's a big question. And rather than jump in and say, here's one thing, I think that's one of the things that we need to do more right now. And this is, to my understanding and my listening to it, this is kind of what the president was alluding to. We need to have real, large, rational conversations to answer that question and to say, what are we doing? What do we have in place? What else can we do? How can we avoid this? The two words that come to my mind always first are, one is awareness. awareness of situations, awareness of potentialities, awareness of dangers. And the other one, the next one, is prevention. And what can we do to prevent those kinds of things to happen? And then, of course, the interventions that, in the meantime, and mitigations and so forth. But it needs to be a longer conversation, and not too much longer from now, but longer conversation with rational heads to say, let's see what works. Let's look at what doesn't work. Let's look at what are some of those best practices that we can try to spread the word around and get out to all the schools and the families and the kids. But then, quite honestly, it takes resources. We can have all these nice things and put them up online or put them in plans, but we need to be able to practice to do and to get the messages out and to make sure that things are implemented effectively.
Short of new resources, do you feel that the programs are in place to work with teachers and staff on a regular basis to train them in different safety approaches?
Yeah, there's an awful lot that is in place already, which is really good. Which is why, if you were to go around to, I'd pick any random school across the state of Washington, and ask them about their safety plan, or ask them about their drills, or ask them about what they would do if, they could tell you. But by the same token, more practice, more whatever it might take with any given building, since each campus is one different from another, that's part of that larger conversation. What can we do right here that might be different, that we might need, as opposed to the school across the street or the school across the state? So, it's a larger conversation, and it's a larger, broader conversation that we need to have to hit all those. What are the missing pieces in our particular plan or in our particular area?
I'm sure you read about this, Mike Donlin, and from your own work as the program supervisor for the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction and Safety Center. I'm sure you read that Sandy Hook Elementary School had a pretty strong security protocol in place.
Yep.
The doors were locked, the buzzer rang, a pop-up video. But the lock system didn't go into effect until 9:30 each morning, and people knew that. I mean, are we talking about tightening up the time we lock our students in even more to make them safer? Because this is a very random and difficult thing to assess.
Yeah, and I think you hit it right there, that it's random and difficult. Random, difficult, tragic beyond measure, but by the same token, and although we hear more and more of this, it is still one of those fairly rare kind of things that happen that doesn't minimize the tragedy by any means at all. But in terms of locking our kids in schools, we've had, there's been conversations around putting armed guards around schools, chaining up fences and so forth, and turning our schools into fortresses. That's not the solution. It's a much larger picture than that, and that goes back to that larger conversation we had. And I just to put in a plug, when we hear stories like this and we hear about the things that happened in the buildings and we hear about what the teachers have done, what the principals have done, and the other staff members, boy, we need to, I don't know how to even put this, we need to really understand that that's our real frontline people out there dealing with our young people, our children every day. And quite honestly, now we need to better understand that teachers, administrators, and school staff are really putting their lives on the line. And whatever we can do to raise awareness, do the prevention efforts and so forth, the more we can do, the better. But we do have to have a larger conversation.
Well, we saw that. We saw that in Connecticut. One last question. I was struck by this on the on your webpage. You have a threat assessment. Threat assessment is a structured group process used to evaluate the risk posed by a student or another person, typically as a response to an actual or perceived threat or concerning behavior.
Right.
So you are trying to engage, get students, schools to engage in this. I imagine that must be a resource-heavy approach to look at individuals and try to figure out if there's a threat.
It is. Quite honestly, it is, and it's one of those very challenging things because it goes back to the awareness level. What are we looking for? And if I see something, what do I do next, and how do I make sure that something happens to intervene appropriately. Some things may or may not be threats at all, but may appear to be, but we need to do those early preventative steps. The challenge in a situation like Connecticut is that that young man was not a student at the school. Obviously, he was 20 years old, and we're talking about an elementary school. That goes back to that conversation we had a few minutes ago, the larger conversation beyond what happens within a school, within a school system, within a school setting. What larger, if you will, threat assessment processes do we have in place, the early awareness of things that might not be quite right, and how do we deal with that systemically?
Well, Mike Donlin, I appreciate the work you're doing. Thank you.
Hey, thank you very much. And you mentioned our website. Folks can take a look. There's a lot of stuff there, and there's a lot of things that are continually added to that to help schools and families deal with all kinds of situations around school safety.
Good. We'll get that up on our website and on our Facebook page as well. Mike Donlin is Program Supervisor for Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction Safety Center. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You know, we asked for some of the things you might be saying to your own children, or maybe as educators, what you are thinking of saying to students in your classroom. Since this was the worst school shooting in our country's history last Friday, should be leading to some conversations, though, as we have heard some people argue, some specialists argue, the thing to do is not to say anything to your kids unless they ask. David wrote us, I have a 6- and an 8-year-old. We've been sent various emails on Friday and over the weekend from the school about the events with information about telling our children, counseling, etc. Ultimately, we told them nothing and are waiting to hear what, if anything, they've heard at school today. This morning, there was a police presence at the local elementary school in the Bellevue School District. It is reminiscent of travel immediately after 9/11. A good friend of ours lives one town over from Newtown in Connecticut. Their school was under lockdown this morning due to a suspicious character. My hope is that a sensible discussion and action happens without the usual deterioration into extremism, political stupidity. The debate doesn't fade as soon as the next news cycle takes hold, and that mental health issues amongst the people, and especially young people, are discussed. And Stacy in Bellevue writes, before I dropped off my elementary school-aged daughters at school this morning, I again told them that they're safe at their school. I told them that the teachers, the parents, the police, the whole community works very hard to make sure nothing will happen to them. But in the back of my mind, I felt that I was lying to them because no one can stop a disturbed individual with an assault weapon from doing this again anytime. I feel like I'm crossing my fingers and hoping that the odds are with us as I send them to school today and every day. And Libby wrote, we spoke with our two sons, age 10 and 12, on Friday afternoon as candidly and simply as we could. We all shed some tears. Everyone talked about what they needed to do, and we made it clear we are intentionally keeping the radio and TV off the coverage until it stops being a continuous media loop. We also let them know we wanted them to share any thoughts or feelings they have over the coming days and weeks. Everyone discussed mental illness and getting help. We discussed gun control laws. We discussed our family values regarding exposure to violence and video games that desensitize children and adults to violence. And she went on to add, one of my children struggles with anxiety, and I would never wait for him to bring it up as it could take a while, and we would see struggling behavior before he could process, and he would struggle alone, especially because they brought it up at school. So the question about what to do next raises a question about law, of course. And Tina Podlodowski, former Seattle City Council member, former person who worked at Microsoft, now working in private practice again, wrote what I thought was an interesting column in Crosscut today. So I just wanted her to join us for a few moments and talk about it. Tina Podlodowski, thanks for talking to us. Nice to talk to you again.
Yes, good morning, Steve.
Your argument is that this is a good time to, again, not shy away from the question of gun control, and that maybe in this state, we should run an initiative. What were you thinking?
Absolutely. I was thinking of two things, action and dialogue. You know, we have had so many incidents of gun violence over the last 20 years that have caught the public's imagination nationwide, whether it was Columbine, Aurora, Virginia Tech, now this tragedy in Newtown, Connecticut, my home state. But what we've never been able to do is turn it into action and turn it into ongoing dialogue. It just seems to me whenever we run an initiative campaign in Washington State, we cover the issue for the duration of the campaign. We get people talking in Seattle, talking in Spokane, talking in Walla Walla. And if it's one thing that we can take as a lesson from a couple of campaigns that have just been run, the Referendum 74 campaign around gay marriage and then also the marijuana initiative, is that these kind of campaigns get people talking, get people thinking, and really organize a group of volunteers, not just for the issue that's at hand. In this case, my suggestion is around various aspects of gun control, particularly assault weapons. But what do we do moving forward? Because this is not a dialogue that should stop anytime soon.
One of the things you wrote about was that it's not 1997. We're far past the ill-fated Initiative 676 campaign for hand trigger locks that overwhelmingly lost at the ballot box. Why, give your reasons for why you think we're not in that place anymore.
I think that we have gone through too many incidents since 1997, starting with Columbine in 1999, for this to not be an issue that individuals want to do something about. I also think, particularly in Washington State, we've organized progressive thought in interesting ways. Look at what happened around Referendum 74 and the number of volunteers and individuals that have come out, again, progressively on civil rights issues. Well, if you believe in civil rights for all, civil rights in many ways don't amount to a hill of beans if you don't have the most basic civil right, and that's the right to safety. So in this case, I think we have an opportunity to educate individuals. I also think we have an opportunity to see the light of day, which elected officials would support a new position, which wouldn't, who would be funding an opposition campaign to something like this, who would be supporting that campaign. Down the road, it just gives us far more information as well to be able to make lasting change, not just in Washington State, but across the country.
I thought your point about Initiative 1240, the charter school campaign, that we saw who the individuals were who step up to put their money into these campaigns, Gates, Allen, Bezos, Ballmer, Hanauer, and of course we'd see it on all sides because a lot of people have deep pockets on this issue. What keeps that debate clear? How do we avoid descending into the political stupidity, as one of our emailers wrote?
Absolutely. Well, I think if we just continue to frame the issue of, you know, having guns and not having guns, taking away a right to guns, I think you lose and you devolve into that. You know, we have a country where there are 270 million guns that are already out there. The genie's out of the bottle. We're not going to stop gun ownership in this country. But can we frame it into a question of responsible gun ownership, a public health issue, as well, because it's not just these mass shootings, mass tragedies that are happening. Kids in our neighborhoods and our schools are being affected and killed by gun violence every day, not just kids, but other folks. It's a public safety issue, too, in terms of our cops and first responders. You know, they're the ones who are facing these high-caliber, semi-automatic combat assault rifles, really, when they're going into these kinds of situations. So I think we can start to move the dialogue into a different place if we don't make it such a black-and-white issue and move on to the what's the public health issue? What are the gun safety issues here? And then what can we also do to stop gun trafficking? Because that's certainly an issue that's going to come up to say, well, guns get stolen every day. Well, great. Let's figure out how to keep those guns from getting stolen and into the wrong hands.
So, Tina Podlodowski, you put this idea out there. Well, what's the next step for you? Are you going to engage in some conversation with folks who have even deeper knowledge and might want to be joining in an initiative process?
Sure, absolutely. Well, it's interesting. If you look at how our initiative process works, in 2013 we'd have until early July to collect signatures to get something onto the November 2013 ballot. In the meantime, we've got a legislature that's just about to convene, and it's an interesting legislature as well, given what's just recently happened in the state Senate. We've got a new governor in Jay Inslee who could pick this up as part of his efforts and part of his mantle, and then let's see what happens as well at the federal level. But I don't think that we should sit complacent and think that a couple of pieces of legislation is going to end this issue. I think the people of Seattle, Washington State, the United States need to get our hands on this, really dig it, and do the work to make lasting change.
Tina Podlodowski has written an article in today's Crosscut, or yesterday's Crosscut, How Gun Control Effort Can Get a Good Start Right Here. You can check it out at crosscut.com. Tina Podlodowski, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve.
Appreciate you talking to us. Let me turn to Sally in Kirkland. Sally, this is an issue of mental illness, as it often is, yes?
I'll be back.
You with me, Sally?
I'm here, yeah.
Good. There's a question.
Well,
You want my comment?
I do want your comment.
Okay, well, I have two basic comments to give you. One is that we have 24% of our population today walking around on the streets who are mentally ill, or at least the vast majority of them are on the streets and mentally ill, because we've done so little for our mental health system in this country. And so many of them are young males. Look at all the ones that have taken the shooting. So we need to do more about our mental health system, and of course that means doing more for government to find money for mental health. And so all of us as citizens need to realize that means taxes, and if we want a safe society, we need taxes. The second thing I want to say is that every single person who is a member of the National Rifle Association is implicit in what happened today, because the National Rifle Association lobbies our representatives in government to get rid of any type of laws to regulate guns. And unfortunately, I guess the other thing I'd have to say is at least more than half of our Congress is also implicit, because they have voted to get rid of those gun control laws because they get money from the National Rifle Association. So the best thing we can do, number one, stop supporting the National Rifle Association and all of the lobbyists that lobby our Congress and give our Congress money. If the National Rifle Association has no money, they can't do the lobbying. And the second thing we can do as citizens is say we want better protection for people who are mentally ill so that they can get help, they can get off the streets, and we don't have this violence that happens. And that's what I need to say.
All right, thank you, Sally. I appreciate that. Thank you. You know, we got this email as well from Nellie. She writes, biggest mistake in gun control initiatives is failing to include supportive gun owners. Instead, Mike Nichols and others use people who have been directly affected by gun crimes or accidents, which give the issue a shaming overlay. I'm a lifelong liberal Democrat, artist, and teacher who gives away time and money to good causes, and I really like to shoot guns. Before I bought a gun, I took a 15-hour gun safety class for women, then got a carry permit. I was also amazed by the number of women who asked me to show them how. We aren't all hardliners. There are many gun owners who believe in gun control. Tina Podlodowski's idea for an initiative is great. I just hope there's a balanced blend of advocates. And let me turn to Bill in Cedar Park. Since, Bill, we were asking what people were saying to their children this morning. What did you say?
Let me turn to Bill in Cedar Park.
And, Bill, when you get there, you'll turn your radio down.
You betcha.
There you go. Go ahead. So, Bill, what did you say to your child?
Oh, Steve, yeah. Well, you know, we kind of picked it up gradually. He didn't hear anything about it in school on Friday, which was good. It literally came apart as I was driving there because I first heard about it on the radio, KUOW, as I was driving to pick him up. I immediately called a couple of parents just to hear myself talk and mourn what had just happened. You know, the rage hadn't set in yet.
Yeah.
You know, but then, you know, eventually we didn't talk about it that day because he hadn't heard about it, but we talked about it the next. And I used clear language because I think what's really important in a lot of this, we've lost language that we need to really speak to each other about what's going on in our society. So I spoke to him. I said, there was a mass murder that was committed in a school by a mentally deficient young man who got hold of weapons from his mother, killed her, and then just proceeded to run rampage in this school, just killing innocent children and teachers. You know, we still don't know all the details about this and that. And, you know, then I just let it rest. And he really didn't have too many questions about it. You know, in some sense, it might have set in almost like as a video game in his mind, you know, sort of like, you know, like Plants vs. Zombies, this little thing he plays on his little Game Boy or whatever, you know. But, you know, just to add to that, you know, I have to go along with your last person. I mean, we've got a political deadlock here by people that are playing a game of all or nothing. Now, granted, our political system is a winner-take-all system, but people got to learn if we're going to exist as a nation, as a united nation, we've got to learn how to compromise. Now, on this particular instance, it's a no-brainer that guns that can shoot 100 bullets a minute are only weapons that are either military-grade or intended to kill large numbers of people in a short period of time, and they don't belong in the hands of any private individuals. Case closed. That should be a no-brainer. Done. You know, the rest of it, yeah, it's legitimate to have a personal weapon for personal defense. It's legitimate to have hunting guns and enjoy hunting. But the rest of this stuff, all of these weapons that are being used in these mass murders, have got to be taken off the streets, out of the hands of ordinary citizens, their kids, and criminals. And I'll end it at that.
All right. Bill, I appreciate it. I'll be curious to hear how this plays out. We'll follow it with all the rest of you as it goes forward. Bill, thanks. You know, if you didn't get a chance to read Nicholas Kristof's article in the New York Times where he made his case for gun control as a public health and public safety issue, do check that out as well. Well, we'll change topics. Terry Roederer is coming up. This is Weekday.
When Adam was a kid, Christmas was magical. In his family's house, he and his siblings could hear but never see Jekko the Elf. They met a mysterious Christmassy figure named Klaus Hofer and Kris Kringle.
He broke out one bone, and he said, "This is one of the bones from the, you know, the original Rudolph. You know, I use it to call the reindeer."
Lights, camera, Christmas, this week.
This American Life, Saturday morning at 11 o'clock. You're tuned to 94.9 KUOW Seattle, news and information. Good morning, it's 10:31. I'm Andy Hurst.
Support for KUOW comes from Soaring Heart Natural Sleep Company, wishing the best to all this holiday season. Soaring Heart believes in helping to create and support healthy, thriving communities. More information online at soaringheart.com.
We have clouds and 44 degrees in the U District. The National Weather Service has issued a high wind warning for much of western Washington until noon today. We're expecting clouds and rain the rest of this afternoon, the high in the mid-40s. Chance of rain this evening, then a chance of snow overnight, the low in the low 30s.
All right. This song goes out to all the leftovers.
Yes, what's in the fridge? Terry Roederer is here to gaze into your refrigerator and help you make a wonderful meal out of it. Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Steve.
All right, in the interest of full disclosure, first of all,
yes.
I had the privilege and the gastronomic delight,
yes,
of being one of your judges for your the pilot you're shooting called Kitchen Circus, which some parts have already appeared on the web. And may I say,
the trailer is on Facebook.
The trailer's on Facebook, and your producer should have told me to smile more because I look a little sour. And
Steve,
I'm sorry about that.
We only look the way we are.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm sorry about that. But where you brought nine amateur chefs, yeah, into your kitchen.
Yeah.
And
they were home cooks.
Home cooks. And yes, you brought them a professional kitchen. It was a lot of fun, and I hope that you get picked up and a big run on some national market.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yes.
You could say you were there then.
And yes, and then you would get real celebrities who would actually be your judges, and that would be good.
No, we'd keep the original crew.
Oh. Well, you had some. I loved when the chefs were there.
Yes.
As judges, because you can learn so much from chefs. Some of the shows will be up on the web, so people
everything
can see them.
Everything will be on the web eventually, but we need to go through the editing program.
Yeah. Well, you shot a little bit of stuff.
Yes, quite a bit, man.
Well, that was fun. And it took place at Rovers, which then I read in the paper, you are going to close.
That's
even
correct.
Though you have 29 out of 30 points in the Zagat Review.
For food and for service.
Food and service. Well, I can attest. People that work with you at Rovers, they're wonderful people.
Yes, they're very, very fortunate men. I've got great surrounding and I think that's all it takes. You know, we always say behind every great man is a great wife or a great partner. You know, behind every great chef, there is a great team. You know, it's like front and back of the house. They're fabulous people, and they make it happen every day. And, I mean, I'm obviously not the only one. I've got you know, I've got the leading program going, but they got to follow, otherwise it doesn't work.
So given that,
it's been it's been 25 years, and my lease is up in April, end of May, actually. And I just had to reflect and say, what do I want to do? Just like you do, Steve.
Yeah.
Writing, radioing, whatever. You know, it's like I'm much more in, I just want to do more. You know, we've tried our hands at Luke 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago now. And, you know, it worked well. And I just want to do more. You know, my problem is because if I redo something, I'm going to sign up for another 10 years. And I didn't see.
Oh, I
wanted to do Rovers for another 10 years. I was like, no, I want to do something else for the next 10 years.
You didn't buy that building.
No, unfortunately, it was never ready for grab. I tried, but never.
So you don't know what you're going to keep Luke open? You don't know what else you're going to do?
Well, I cannot do, but I can't talk about it yet because it's not, you know, I need to have something to talk about.
Fair enough.
Concise.
All right, fair enough.
But I do have other projects, yes.
And you have that TV?
And we have TV, pilot. Kitchen Circus, and all that stuff. So I have definitely turned up. Work for me has never been a problem. There's plenty of it, and it's not. I don't have I don't have boredom in my life. I can't afford it.
I bet some of the folks that are working at Rovers though are a little sad. I mean, they're gonna lose their job, but they must also be sad that the team's going to go away.
You know, we're going to make sure that they get something out of, you know, further down the line,
and yeah.
You know, there will be options for them to sign up for more or more of a different thing. So. You know, there is definitely no, it's not a sad new, I mean, to me, it's, you know, it took me a while to mentally be ready for this kind of behavior because it took me a while to convince myself that it was okay to do. It's not easy when you're, you know, 25 years is a long time, you know, of your life bleeding every day. I mean, not bleeding, but being in it every day, you know, it's not an easy thing to let go, but once the decision was made, I was at peace with it and I'm totally at peace with it now.
So when is Rovers going to close its door?
We're taking reservation till the end of April. If everything goes well, we go to the end of May. But the end of April is what we're shooting for right now.
And then,
so if you don't have a reservation at Rovers in the next 4 months, I would suggest calling 206-325-7442 and book your reservation. It's definitely, the phone has been ringing off the hook last week since the news came out. You know, we're booked for New Year's Eve. I can tell you that much ahead, so don't bother. We always booked for New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve is not a problem. And we will not take reservation for Valentine's Day until the 5th of January, which is the beginning of the year.
Because you want to make sure everybody's really in love if they come there.
Yes, and also, you know, for 25 years, we've always held to the principle of one holiday at a time. And I won't take reservation for Valentine's Day until after the 1st of the year.
All right. New kinds of foods you want to be
chefing? It's going to be, maybe not so, you know, a little bit more diversified maybe in a way. I mean, I'm going to try my hands on many different things. You know, be eclectic maybe more. So we'll see. We'll have plenty of things to do. So, but there will still be Thierry's hat involved in the whole scenario, so don't go too far. It's not going to be that crazy.
And you're still going to do the radio show with you and Tom Douglas?
Oh, yeah,
radio
absolutely.
On Cairo? Oh, 97.3. Look how nice I am.
Oh, you're such a sweetheart. You're promoting another station.
On the weekends. Record it and listen to it. Well, you know, I don't know when, because you're always listening to KOW, right?
Right.
All right, Terry Rotaro is here. We got the news. Now we're going to go inside your refrigerator, so take a look. And then give us a call and see what he can make out of your leftovers or just that, you know, wilted lettuce, some Tabasco sauce, and some old yogurt. 206-543-5869. Well, he's already got an idea. 1-800-289-5869. Give us a call. We'll take a quick break and come back with your phone calls. Look at what's in your fridge with Terry Rotaro on weekday, KUOW, Seattle.
Good morning, it's 10:39. You're tuned to 94.9 KUOW Seattle. I'm Andy Hurst. As we've been hearing this morning, the Newtown Elementary School shooting has brought the issue of gun control back to the forefront. So how has it changed your thinking on the issue? KUOW's Ross Reynolds takes your phone calls at noon, and we welcome your thoughts right now at our feedback line, 206-221-3663. Is the Newtown shooting a tipping point in the debate about gun control? Call us right now, 206-221-3663.
Support for KUOW comes from Amazing Grace Spiritual Center, presenting its fourth annual Mystical Christmas Celebration. The hidden meaning of an ancient story is revealed through lessons, carols, and candlelighting Sunday, December 23rd at 5 p.m. at Seattle Unity Church. More at AmazingGraceSpiritualCenter.org.
The worst of this summer's drought is over, but for farmers and ranchers and the people who live off the land, it changed the way they do business.
We're trying to help each other. That's how I found out where some of my hay was from my neighbors, you know.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, getting by in a drought year for cattle ranchers. Next time on Marketplace, it's from 8 p.m.
That story and much more coming up tonight at 6:30. We have cloudy skies and 44 degrees in the U District. We're expecting clouds and rain the rest of today, the high in the mid-40s. Chance of rain this evening, then a chance of snow overnight, the low in the low 30s. There's a chance of snow in the morning tomorrow, tapering off to just a chance of rain in the afternoon. Tomorrow's high in the upper 30s.
Terry Rotero is here, the chef in the hat, author of the Chef in the Hat recipes from Rover's
cookbook. Yeah, thank you.
Yes, thank you. And he is the owner of Luke in Madison Valley and Rover's, which, as he told us, will be closing its doors in late spring. So make your reservations now, except for Valentine's Day, unless you can prove your love. 206-543-5869, 1-800-289-5869. People have to come with, like, certificates of their marriage and then vows of fealty and love to one another, and then you'll let them make reservations at Rover's for Valentine's.
Really? You're like putting my calendar up, and I really don't have time to worry about that. Let's finish the year. Let's go through New Year's Eve, and then we can talk about Valentine's Day.
I kid because I love.
One holiday at a time.
All right. We're going to look inside your refrigerator, and we're starting with Janelle in Redmond. Hi, Janelle.
Hi, Janelle.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. Oh, good. These are good things. Please, Janelle, what's inside? What do you got on the pantry? What's inside your refrigerator?
Well, it's in my bread box. I have a loaf of stale artisan bread, and I also have some cherry tomatoes that don't look like they're up for a salad anymore.
But they're still edible.
Yeah. Flies flying them around them or anything like that.
How old is your stale bread? Is it like 2 days old or is it 3 weeks old?
It's more like about 5 days old.
All right, so it's just old bread. It's not really stale yet. I mean, it's
it doesn't have mold growth.
Yeah, exactly. It's not moldy.
It's not moldy, but, you know, it's hard enough you could probably hammer a nail with it.
That's a true French bread right there. Multi-use of a baguette. You can get out of jail for free, or you can... Remember Chin Chen Chong? They used to use a baguette to just get out of jail. So,
no.
Cherry tomato and stale bread is a little pretty... No, what else do you have in your refrigerator? You got to have something else besides that, right?
Well, I have some cheese, and I have herbs, and I have beef stock.
Do you have any? Do you have any? Do you have any? What was I going to say? Milk, eggs.
I have half and half and 2% milk, and I'm out of eggs, but I need to buy some on my way home.
All right, so we're going to do some. We can do some pain perdu, also known as French toast. So we can start with that baguette, and we can, because the idea here is we're going to bring back that bread and some of it, and make it for your dessert, as in. French bread, French toast. So you can use one part of your stale bread to be soaked into a mixture of half and half, 2% milk, egg yolks, whole eggs, I'm sorry, a little bit of cinnamon grated, and a little bit of vanilla if you have any. Do you have any vanilla extract?
Yes.
Put a little bit of that together. So you're making your French toast by soaking that bread really well. Obviously, you're going to need a lot of liquid because it's going to soak it up really well. Because it's dry bread, so it's going to soak it up. And then you can cook that in the pan with a little bit of butter. As soon as it becomes past the blonde foamy taste stage, So you get it melted, white for me, then it gets blonde. Then you put in your bread and you color it on both sides and finish it in the oven so it cooks all the way. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And then you can do whatever you want from that. Do you have anything in the freezer such as berries or any huckleberry? Hold on. This is the next thing. Do you get any of that?
Frozen cranberries. I don't think it would go very well, though.
No, it would go perfect. So you take the cranberry and you make a little syrup of sugar. So you're going to do a little bit of sugar, water. You're going to put a little nugget of butter in there. And just a little bit of water, not too much. Put a little nugget of butter in there. Melt the whole thing down. Cook it for a couple of minutes. Throw in your cranberry in there. Toss it around. And now you're going to have sweet and sour cranberry. And you can put that right on top of your French toast. A little whipped cream with that, and you'll have a wonderful dessert.
Well, thank you.
So, yeah, you can whip your half and half. I guess you could whip your half and half. Yeah, that takes going to take a little longer than whipping. Just put in the...
We're not going shopping,
that's right. So you don't have to have whipped cream. You can just do egg whites and whip them with a little bit of sugar and make a French meringue and put that right on top. She's buying eggs on the way home. So for the other rest of your bread, I would say just cut crust, just cut cubes, little cubes of bread. And we're going to make a bread salad where you're going to take all those croutons, it's called crouton in France, and you're going to make poached egg, cherry, tomato. And do you have any greens in your refrigerator by any chance? Any lettuce, anything?
I have some romaine and I have some parsley.
Romaine is perfect. So you chop the parsley, mix it with the romaine, you take the crouton, you toss them in olive oil, a little bit of salt, and a little bit of garlic, if you have any garlic in your house.
Yes.
So you put the whole thing in the pan. You put all your crustinis in there, and they're going to soak up that oil, and it's going to be like almost like a fried little piece of bread, and it's going to soften them down a little bit, and it's going to give them some texture. And then the cherry tomatoes, you're going to take them, and after you did the crouton, you're going to toss the cherry tomato cut in half, toss them in the pan as well, put back the crouton right in it at the last minute, toss the whole thing over the romaine diced salad with parsley, little salt and pepper, and drizzle a lot of olive oil and a little drab of... do you have any balsamic vinegar or any red wine vinegar in your cupboard?
I have both.
Okay, balsamic would be great because it's got a little sweetness, so toss a little bit of that right on top of your salad, and you'll have a crust, you'll have a crouton, tomato, romaine, and then grate some cheese right on top of that, and you'll have a wonderful little salad, lots of texture going through, and you won't waste your bread.
Yay! Thank you.
And the other one, when you have whole bread, for all of you out there, bread pudding is the best thing to do with whole bread.
How do you make a bread pudding?
Well, it's the same kind of idea as French toast, except more liquid, and then you bake it in the oven. But the idea is, and you're using your whole bread for that. Same with whole rice. You make rice pudding. Same with, same concept.
Don't throw your old bread away.
Happy holidays.
Yeah, happy holidays. All right, very good. All right, Kristen's and Graham. Now, Kristen... what do you have? And keep it simple.
Yeah, it's simple. I have a lot of squash. So I've got a garden, and we decided to plant a bunch of seeds. So we have kind of cross breeds of squash, too. So I've got acorn, spaghetti, some zucchini-looking squash, and pumpkin squash, too. And I've got a lot of it.
Wow.
I'm starting to get sick of it. I've made a lot of different recipes with it, but he's... saying, okay, I don't know what else to do with this squash. So.
Well, the spaghetti squash, one thing I like to do is to roast them whole and then take a fork, yeah. Cut them in half, take a fork and really take them out of the center of the pumpkin. So right. You have all these nice, beautiful spaghetti squash. And then from that, you can do many things. You could make little pancakes with that. So you just mix a little bit of egg and flour around your... grated spaghetti squash and then cook them just like you would a potato cake.
Okay, yeah.
So that would be nice. And you could put some grated meat right on top of that, make like a little burger or whatever. It'd be a nice little delicious way to have a different way of having squash.
Okay.
So now you're going to be making spaghetti squash cake for the whole cake. Family and get rid of all your spaghetti squash. How's that?
Yeah. Awesome.
So,
any other ideas?
Yes. For the pumpkin squash, do you know how to make a cheesecake?
No, I've never made cheesecake before.
Well, it's not that complicated, but basically you roast your pumpkin, you take all the puree out of there, so now you have pureed pumpkin, right? And basically all the recipe will start like that. So you get pureed pumpkin, what do you do with that? Well, you could make a wonderful cheesecake with that, which is sour cream, eggs, sugar, flavoring of whatever you want. It could be almond extract, it could be vanilla, I'm a big fan of almond extract with my pumpkin because it really gives it a different layer of flavor. And then you bake, you know, you do a nice graham cracker crust on the bottom, put that together in the oven, cook it, and then it comes out, and the whole family is going to be astonished when you've used pumpkin a different way. Obviously, you need to go into a cookbook or Google it up and find a recipe to have the right number, but I don't have the number off the top of my head, but just to have the right proportion.
So the only
recommendation I make is if you're going to make a cheesecake with pumpkin puree, you need to make sure the puree is not too wet. So what it means is once you come out of the oven and you take all that puree out, what I would recommend is to put it on the sheet pan or on a pan and cool it down in put it in the oven longer while you're mixing it around really often so it dries up. Or you could do it in a pot over the stove, but it's a little bit longer of a process and much harder. It's much easier to burn that way.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Oh, she's already hanging.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, she's there.
She was thinking.
Sorry, I lost you for a second. That sounds awesome. That sounds great.
And then, of course, I would say the bisque is the other way to go, is to just make a pumpkin bisque, which basically is called a bisque because it's got cream in it. But, you know, you never go wrong with cream. You know, especially if you have some cream with sourness in it, you know, you just take, you roast your pumpkin, you cut them, always drizzle them with a nice amount of olive oil or nut oil, seasoning, grated nutmeg, cinnamon, put all that on top of your pumpkin and roast it that way. And then when it's done, put it into a food processor so it purees really nicely. Then make a reduction of cream on the side. So take a couple cups of cream, reduce it down to 3/4 cup, and then put seasoning of what you want your soup to taste like. So I usually use salt, pepper, and either a little spice, like maybe a little bit of harissa, which I always use harissa because I love harissa. But you could use hot chili pepper if you want, just a little bit. And then finish with a little bit of that cream. You put that cream into your blender, into your food processor, mix the whole thing together, and boom, instantly you've got a wonderful, beautiful, luscious pumpkin bisque.
Yeah,
if you make a big batch of it, you can freeze it.
Right. Yeah. Do you think you could can it or no?
Oh yeah, absolutely. You put it in a jar, put the lid on, put it in boiling water for 10 minutes. Once the lid is up, you get a jar of pumpkin bisque.
Okay.
You have to be careful because you have to be careful. There's dairy in it, so make sure you do it correctly.
Pureed pumpkin. You can't can just straight pureed pumpkins. I wonder
why not.
Okay. They said because you don't know the acidity of it. I also think it has something to do with the thickness, whether it's very very wet or very dry.
Right.
So you wouldn't know how long to do that, and you have to do it under a pressure cooker for that. But even still, they say now you're not supposed to. I guess you used to be able to, but not anymore. But
yeah, and I would put the whole thing in a Ziploc bag and put it in the freezer because you're going to use it in the next couple of weeks. So
yeah,
I wouldn't worry about canning this stuff. Good luck.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Kristen, thank you. Thank you for that. I 3 minutes, I got one question for you before I turn to Wellspring Family Services to ask them what they need for the holidays. What are you doing special? What's your special holiday meal this year? Doing anything different?
The 24th of December, we get together with a bunch of friends, and we've done this ever since the kids were very, very little. We used to go downtown, take the carousel, and then take a horse-drawn carriage, and then go for brunch. That was tradition on the 24th. We'd meet with a bunch of friends, and we are about 12 of us, and we meet. We usually go to Sazerac downtown, you know, in the Monaco Hotel.
Mm-hmm. I've seen it, yes.
And it's a good restaurant, and, you know, we've been going there for, it's been a tradition. We go there, I don't know, it's been like 15 years, I think, we've done it. We've done Lola in between, intermittent in between in some years, but in general, we go to Sazerac and we have a wonderful time and spend the evening, and then we come home and play game, board game. The kids do whatever they have to do, and you know, the kids are 22 and 18, so they're probably not going to hang around too much. But it's a fun holiday. It's very calm, and I like the calmness of it.
And Christmas Day?
Christmas Day, we wake up. We used to wake up at 6 a.m. because the kids used to get us up. But now they are much older, and they stay in bed until 10 o'clock. We have to get them up. Okay, guys, get up. And then we have a nice, you know, opening the present, and then we obviously have a, you know, big breakfast. That's where we all actually are, around the hearth of the house, where we all are in the kitchen cooking away, making coffee, doing all kind of different things.
Oysters, turducken,
desserts. No. Just plain old good breakfast. like good eggs, bacon, potatoes, you know, just a very good, simple, heavy breakfast, and then we move on from the day. And usually the day is very calm. You know, we always visit friends of ours on Christmas Day. At the end of the day, we usually go to their house, have a little champagne and some, you know, foie gras terrine and smoked salmon, you know, just the everyday stuff.
Yeah. Smoked salmon and foie gras terrine.
Yeah. Isn't that the way you're supposed to have it?
I have heard that, yeah.
No, I'm lucky enough to have some of that on hand most often. So, you know.
Do you make your own?
Oh, yeah, of course. We make our own. It's okay. So, just so it's clear, there's foie gras and there's foie gras terrine. Foie gras is the actual liver itself. So, you have to process it. Either you slice it and pan sear it, so it becomes seared foie gras, or you make, you know, put it in a mold, a terrine mold, and bake it. And that becomes a terrine of foie gras.
All right. Give me a call. Terry Rotero.
You available?
Yeah. Terry Rotero is the chef in the hat, owner of Rovers and Luke in Madison Valley, and also the person who comes in and looks inside your refrigerator and tells us all sorts of great things. That pumpkin bisque sounds good.
Yeah, it's very simple and it's easy to put away.
All right. I appreciate you being here again. We'll see you
again.
Oh,
my great pleasure. Happy holidays to all.
Happy holidays to you, too. I want to turn to Wellspring Family Services here. They, on their website, they say they aim to build self-sufficient families who can grow in a supportive environment. They work with folks who are facing mental health challenges, domestic violence, homelessness. And to support homeless families throughout the holiday season, they've opened a toy room where unwrapped, new donated toys are given to homeless parents to gift wrap and give to their children. Crystal Dixon is volunteer manager. Hello, Crystal.
Steve, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you for talking to us today. How can people get toys to Wellspring Holiday Toy Room?
Well, they can deliver unwrapped toys and games to our facility on 1900 Rainier Avenue South. We also have a wish list on Amazon.com where we not only get the toys and games delivered, but we also get 3% of any sales donated back to us through that program.
How does that work? It's just you go to Amazon and look up Wellspring?
Yep. If you put Wellspring in, there's a search field there for wish lists, and you put Wellspring, you'll find we have two wish lists currently going, one for the toy room and then one for program supplies for our early learning center and our parent-child service therapy program, which the kids will be able to play with over and over and over again. And then our toy room is the main list there, and it has a bunch of toys and games that parents have suggested and children have suggested. And then once you buy it from there, they can ship it off. You don't even have to come here. And then Amazon gives us 3% back.
How many kids do you expect to get toys to? Do you have a broad number?
Last year we served just over 1,000. We've already served 753 this year. And we're open all week, and we expect this week to be pretty busy. So we're expecting probably between 200 and 300 more children to come through in the next 4 or 5 days.
And people can do that? All right, there it is. I did that quick search, see how that worked. There on Amazon, Wellspring Family Services. And there's all the information for kids to, for toys to give and ways to give.
But people can also bring them in if they like. Often we like to have the kids come in and see the toy room, and they can put the toy on the shelf for another child or parent to pick out. So we can kind of do it
all right,
any old way.
New and unwrapped toys. They also wouldn't mind some new and unwrapped gloves and some gift cards for some of the major stores as well. You can find out more. We have a link to Wellspring Family Services at KUOW.org. Crystal, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Steve. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. Happy holidays to everybody. Terry, happy holidays.
Thank you so much. Same to you, Steve.
We shall we'll continue our conversations with you tomorrow. I hope you'll be with us. Andy Hirsch is our engineer. Weekday is produced by Katie Sewell, Jason Bagano, Amin Al-Sadeh, Alexander Garrettin, Daniel Anthony Goodwin, our interns. This is 94.9 KUOWCL.
Good morning, it's 10:59. We'll get an update from NPR News in less than 2 minutes.
Support for KUOW comes from Edmonds Community College, offering certificate and degree options in energy conservation, efficiency, and sustainability in the built environment. Classes start January 2nd. More about this growing, future-focused field at edcc.edu/energy.
In Nigeria's seemingly lawless oil fields, there's a lack of safety, multiple spills, and widespread theft.
Something like a fifth of Nigeria's oil is lost to theft. That's 400,000 barrels a day of oil being stolen. It certainly is a major contributor to the spills.
I'm Steve Kerwood. The toll of rampant corruption on Nigeria's oil boom. Next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
That story and much more coming up tonight at 10 o'clock. You're tuned to 94.9 KUOW FM Seattle, 1340 KUOW Tumwater, 90.3 KQOW Bellingham, and digital HD.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.